I'm Philip Alcoholic. I'm very excited to be here. I'm kind of hoarse. Thank you, Earl. Add an extra zero to that check I gave you. First off, I'd like to thank the committee for asking us to come up and participate. This is a wonderful place to come. Wonderful. And I, too, have fallen in love with it. It's always a great enjoyment to come by. Special thanks to the cooks. I've eaten so much I can't breathe properly. My pants aren't fitting too well, but I'm happy. Yeah, joyous and free, I might add. Some more thanks to the old friends that I know, the new friends I've met, and the new friends I shall meet. I hope to meet every one of you and get to know you a little bit better. I'm an alcoholic, yeah. Nothing special about me other than I lived through it long enough to make it to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a falling down, throwing up, poo-pooing in my pants, wetting myself, drunk. Yeah, and I don't have to live that way anymore. For years and years, I did live that way, and it's part of my journey. Yeah. I'm so grateful to have made it to Alcoholics Anonymous. Words can't explain it. Yeah. That's one reason I'm so excited. I've prayed up, and I've emptied my mind, and I don't know what I'm going to say. I gave my talk already, actually. All day long, I gave my talk, and I'll be honest, it was a wonderful talk. Yeah. And you people were, I mean, precious. You laughed at all the punchlines, and you knew the jokes, you know? And I almost ran a red light. You know? It's just, good grief, what am I doing here? And I'm here because I've been asked. And I suited up and I showed up. Something that I didn't do all the time when I was out there drinking and drugging. My sobriety date is August 21st of 1991. And for that, I am truly grateful. My home group is the DeSoto Group. It's in Olive Branch, Mississippi. As Franklin Williams used to say, Memphis is a suburb of Olive Branch. And we're about a 9-iron from Memphis. So if you're ever in Olive Branch or Memphis, stop on in. We meet Thursday and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. We have Al-Anons at the same time, same building, Maples Methodist Church. We'd love to have you stop in and say hi and drink coffee and share a little bit and laugh with us. Good God, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want to be here. I didn't like Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew I was an alcoholic for years and years and years and decades. I'm from an alcoholic home, and I can say that because I have uncles on both sides that made it to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never knew they were in Alcoholics Anonymous till I started sobering up. And the reason I found out that I had family members in Alcoholics Anonymous, it wasn't because it was a great pat on the back or, you know, a great thing to do and be. It was just a slanderous thing on the family name, basically. You know, you're like your brother, Uncle Robert, and that stayed drunk all the time, you know? And I thought that was pretty good. You know, I had they were good examples of Alcoholics Anonymous. And people respected those people, but they didn't talk about them being ex-alcoholics or alcoholics that have sobered up, however you want to look at it. I started drinking, when I was delivered and the doctor slapped me on my little behind and I started whining, I didn't stop till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I just stayed peed old the whole time, you know. And somewhere in my early teens, I started drinking. And I started drinking alcoholically. Now, being raised in a heavy drinking environment, it wasn't anything new to go from drink to drink, beer to beer when there was company and take my little sips. They all thought that was cute. And I thought it was kind of cute too. I was going for the pats on the back, and I was also, I guess, going for that little buzz. But I didn't, the miracle never happened. The miracle happened for me in my early teens. And I was just a depressed, you know, neurotic kid that had been, you know, raised, you know, not reared, but raised in an alcoholic home. And I'll call it an alcoholic home. But I was like a coil spring. And one night I went home, and I got a couple of tall boys, a couple of slits, and I drank them, and I just kind of slinked out. I just got relaxed, and the world got comfortable for me. The world was even funny. I started laughing, having a good time, entertaining myself. You know, I had that committee back then, and they were happy that night, you know. And I was having such a good time, my neighbor next door came out and asked me what I was doing. I said, hey, I'm drinking beer. Man, this is great stuff. You know, I didn't like the taste of it. I was just looking for something new, and I found it. And I mean, it was wonderful. It really was. And we went inside, and we got in the whiskey cabinet and started drinking, and I passed out that night. Came to in the front yard. Little John was gone, but I was a blackout drinker from the get-go. And I was that way till the day I sobered up. Yeah. I did a lot of things in blackouts that I'm not too proud of, and I did a lot of things in blackouts that, had a good time, I think, you know. But going through my early alcoholism, it was a lonely, lonely time for me. My parents had divorced in my early teens, and my older brother was off in the military, my older sister was off at college, and I'm left in a big house by myself, and my mom's not coming home half the time. Yeah. And so I'd wake up in the morning, I'd go down and look in the fridge, and it really depended on how I felt what I would do in the morning. You know, I might give me a cupcake and a glass of milk and go to school. But if I was kind of restless, irritable, and discontented, I might pop me a Budweiser and then go to school. Because I was getting courage from Budweiser at that time. Yeah. And I wasn't trying to hide it. You know, I wasn't proud of it, but I wasn't trying to hide it. Already it was something that I got comfort in. And that comfort grew and grew. I started out being kind of a weekend warrior, and before I was out of high school, I was a daily drinker, and on top of that, I was a morning drinker. It got so out of hand that they sent me to military school, and that's going to straighten him up. And that's going to give him some discipline by God, and he's going to grow up and be a man. Well, an alcoholic doesn't take people, you know, long, at least for me. I knew the ropes immediately. You know, I could tell a drinker, heavy drinker, alcoholic immediately. I knew where to get it, what to do, and I got caught going AWOL, took my lumps, my licks, my demerits, and kept on doing it. But in the process, I found out the people that ran the military school, some of those people were alcoholics. And lo and behold, I knew how to operate. I knew what an enabler was. I didn't know the definition or anything, but I knew how to use people. And that's what I did. I'd do anything I could do to get a drink. Yeah. And one that I was, you know, completely insane. I wasn't, you know, sane, but I wasn't completely insane. And this rocked on, and like most young people like me, I wound up coming back and married my sweetheart. And bless her heart, we had a child immediately. and I'm working full-time, and I'm going to college full-time. And even for a young buck, that's a hard, hard road to hoe. And I did that for quite some time, so my hat is off to anybody that can do that. Anybody that can suck it up and try to do the correct thing, even though that I was spiraling downhill, And one of my last lab tests I took, I was completely drunk. I did quite well on it, which was, it was really funny because I'm not a genius by any stretch of the imagination. I basically have a learning disability, if anything else. And I couldn't admit to something like that before I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wasn't a rocket scientist. But I'd tell everybody I was, by God. In those bars, I flew jets, and I did this, and I did everything, but, I wasn't a doctor, I don't think, but I did everything else. And that poor woman, I put her through so much insanity, and she wound up in Al-Anon. imagine that. But my drinking by this stage had gotten so violent, and I was completely out of control. It was nothing for me to come home and sit down at the dinner table and be completely so insane that I'd get my plate of food and throw it up against the wall, and food would go all over the house. And I'd say, "You clean it up." And I'm not too proud of that, but that's what alcoholism did to me. It took me to where I didn't love myself, much less anybody else. And on top of that, we had a child. And that poor man, poor young man, got to live in that household for a long time. Probably too long. If it was one day, it was too long. And I put him, I'm sure I scarred him deeply. But one day, I came home, and make a long story short, I put a bayonet through a door. And in my cockiness, my arrogance, and my selfishness, and my self-centeredness, I told that woman, "Take that knife out of that door." And she left it there. And that knife stayed in that door for probably 6 months. My friends would come over. Of course, the friends I had were drunken friends like myself, and they'd just walk in and hang their coats on it, like a coat rack. And we made jokes about that kind of stuff, and we made jokes just kind of make it not hurt so much, because it was hurting. But I couldn't let anybody know it was hurting. I had that guilt and remorse that was piling up so quick, even at a young age, I didn't know what to do. And I'm trying to be Mr. Cool. And I'm trying to be Mr. Polite. And I would talk to ladies so nice and polite. It just made me ill. It just made me ill. I was using and abusing everybody in my life. I didn't know what a friend was. No one could be trusted because I could not trust myself. That's what alcoholics like. That's what alcoholism did to me. Made my life absolutely unbearable. And I got kicked out of more places than the law allows. I have a... This just came up a month or two ago. I'm one of the few people I know that got kicked out of Graceland. And when you get kicked out of Graceland, I didn't even hear a "thank you very much." They kicked me out so quick. And the friend that was with me, that we went up there together, he's raising Cain with me all the way to the car. Call me everything from a worthless, SOB to you name it. "I can't believe I brought you up here. You embarrassed me, blah, blah, blah." And we get in the car, and the first thing he goes, "Where you want to go to now?" He forgot all about it. Everything was done and over with, and we're at, you know, we're going someplace else, you know. And I mean, I've been kicked out of the Peabody, Memphis. Been kicked out of, one night I got kicked out of 3 dive clubs in Whitehaven. And the third one, we went in the third one, it's the King of Clubs on Brooks Road. Beautiful place, let me tell you. I mean, it was just beautiful. And we made a pack. We'd been beat up twice, and it's like, now let's just go in here and have a beer, be nice and polite, and, you know, just mellow out. Let's mellow out. And we walked in and sat down, and everybody's having a good time, and it just went silent. And I looked up, and my partner's looking at some other big man. And next thing I knew, everybody in there was swinging. And next thing I knew, I was airborne going out the back door. And it's like 5 steps and gravel driveway. And I mean, I just go head first. Jimmy comes behind me. And we get in my car, and on the way home, we have to pull over and fight because he's embarrassed me, you know. And we're in the middle of airways fighting, and cars are just, you know, barely missing us. And the next day, we acted like nothing happened. Yeah, what now? What do you want to do now? Yeah, and that stuff still adds all that stuff, that nasty, you know, guilt or remorse. You know, it's humorous, but it's not. Yeah, because I took that stuff home. Yeah, when we're going, what next? Yeah, I'm going home raising Cain with people that love me. Yeah, and that's not why God made me, but I didn't know that. I probably did, but I just didn't know what to do. And I lived my life not knowing what to do. Walking to a country club because I was hungry one night, raining, it's cold, I'm drunk, hadn't eaten in a day or two. And I get to the country club, and of course I know I shouldn't walk in the front door and embarrass the family or anything, so I go around back and go in the kitchen. I'm sitting there like a wet rag in a pity pot, eating lobster dangles, and telling the people back there what a macho, cool person I am. Now, is that not alcoholism? Yeah. How could I do something like that? I did it because I had to. I didn't know I had to do that, but I know now I had to. What a life. Yeah. And I could tell war stories, and I could tell humorous things. And in the talk this afternoon, people just roared about that stuff. But the good thing about it, I was driven by wanting to show everybody off. And I had a small business, and I thought I was doing okay. But the best thing that came out of this business I had, I would get out and sell, and I would go up to, it's kind of like a CK's restaurant, and there were a bunch of men up there that, they were up there drinking coffee, and most of them were in the car business, and I'm up there hustling upholstery and a little body and paint work to do, and trying to make a little living, and they were always making fun of me. Yeah. And they were going, are you just now coming in from last night, or are you just now waking up getting ready to start a night? You know, what's wrong with you? And this one guy kept telling me, you know, if you live through it, we'll get you. Yeah. And I didn't want to ask him too many questions about what he meant, because I had an idea what he meant. And I didn't want to hear any solutions because I was trying to force the only solution I knew. Yeah. But I'd have to go back and get business. And I'd hear, if you live through it, we'll get you. And after a period of time, even that got so painful, I had just not go back. And make a long story short, I drank until I just completely lost my health, you know, lost my mind. I lost everything. And I mean, I was actually losing everything. And the building I lived in had a lot of doctors, nurses, and people that worked over the VA. And they were my enablers, and they were putting me back together for years, and we partied together and had a great time. But it came to that point where when I went home at night, I wouldn't shut the door because I had this sneaky feeling that somebody might need to find the body. Yeah. I was scared. I was just living that life. I was so afraid of everything, and I was so afraid of dying alone. You know, I just didn't know what to do. And a girlfriend of mine, she got me out to my dad's house, which was one of those love-hate relationships at best. And I was basically 100 pounds. I was yellow. My lips, my earlobes were light gray. And the eyes of my head were kind of sunk back. And I had a chip on my shoulder about the size of a log. And I was desperately trying to get help. I was desperately trying to ask for help. I was desperately trying to do anything, just make anything work. I was to the point that I was suicidal. And of course, they started making phone calls to some doctors and what can we do? What can we do? And they started asking me all these questions and talking to me and trying to get me to calm down. And I was in such a desperate state, I started just telling them things that I knew would hurt them. You know, I wanted them to hurt as bad as I've hurt. I wanted their gut to just twist and bend out of shape just like my gut had. Yeah, that's where alcoholism took me. Yeah, because I wanted to blame them for everything I had done. I've been doing it with everybody, yeah. And they got me to the doctor, yeah. And God was working in my life. The doctor they got me to, his wife had just passed away from alcoholism. He had read the big book. He knew about alcoholism. And he was kind of like a tough love doctor. He told me a lot of things my sponsor wound up telling me. He told me immediately, you've got to get honest. You've got to get honest with me. And when I did my urine test, my urine looked like coffee. And that scared me. Now this is the next day, and I've got guilt and remorse of all that stuff I said the night before. And compounded with all that stuff of, you know, they're still trying to help me. What do I do? You know, I don't want to be here. I want to run. You know, that's what I've done all my life. Just run, change my scenery, do something. But by God, I can't stand this stuff. Yeah. And they went to weigh me. Said, don't weigh him. I can tell from across the room he's underweight. And I heard him tell the nurse when she looked at my sample, he said, you know, that man's dead. He just doesn't know it yet. That'll wake you up. That'll wake you up. And he took me in the back office, and they, you know, did some quickie tests. And I got honest with him. I told him everything I've been doing. I went, well, no, I didn't. I'm lying to you. I lied to this doctor, okay? He asked me, he said, obviously, you drink. How much do you drink a day? I said, a fifth. I drank a fifth of whiskey a day. And that was a bold-faced lie. I drank around the clock. I drank beer in the morning to stop the shakes. About 9, 10 o'clock is Snobs. You know, 12 or 1 o'clock is Old Charter. And I drank Old Charter until I came to the next day, walked in the bathroom, brushed my teeth, threw up, hit one beer, throw it up, hit another beer, and I could go about my day. Yeah. That's where I went with my alcoholism. Had to have it. Yeah. And I told him, lied to him about that. He asked me about barbiturates. I said, yes, sir, I do a few barbiturates. I do them about a handful. What about your amphetamines? Yes, sir, I do some of those, and I do those for by the handful, too. You do any powder or anything like that? I said, yes, sir, I was trying to be cute, and I told him I own half of Peru. And he didn't think that was funny, but by God, I did. Yeah, I was looking for anything to make me even smile. I didn't know how to smile or laugh. I knew how to laugh at other people, but I didn't know what an honest laugh was. Anyway, he gave me some medicine. I went back, and he told me, he said, if you do everything I ask you to do, at best, you got 40% chance of survival. I said, okay, I'll take that. I'll take 40%. I'll do anything you ask me to do. And I did. For 3 months, I did everything that doctor told me to do. Every place he sent me to a different doctor, a different specialist every day. I was there on time every day. Yeah. They're drawing blood left and right. Every other day, they're pulling blood. And I walked in there after about 3 months. I hadn't had a drink in 3 months. And I'm doing Valium that was prescribed to me. I'm doing Xanax. But I'm not doing them really like he is prescribing them because I'm scared of them. I'm just kind of chewing when I'm getting really jumpy. I'm just chewing on these things, you know. And I got so crazy one day, I'm seeing wasps. I'm fighting wasps one night, you know, and they weren't there, you know. I mean, I was completely out of my mind. Alcoholism, yeah. And I walked in there after 3 months. He said, I believe you've been drinking. Find yourself another doctor. And my heart just fell right out of my chest. I begged him, hey, I've not been drinking, yeah. But at the same time, I'd made my mind up that afternoon, by God, I'm getting me a fifth of whiskey. And I did. I left there, went straight to the whiskey store, got me a fifth of whiskey, and went home. Got me a glass. It's kind of like this glass right here. But it wasn't vodka. That's not vodka either. That's one. Put me about three fingers of Old Charter in it and hit that drink. And I mean, I was feeling so good before it went up to my lips, and it tasted like crap. I mean, the taste was not there. I really thought I loved the taste of Old Charter. Yeah. But by God, I fixed me another one. I drank that one, and it still didn't taste that good. I fixed me a third one. And by the time I was sipping on that third one, this thing's getting all over me, but I'm not getting ease and comfort. I'm getting a double dose of guilt and remorse and 100 forms of fear. And I'm in a panic and I don't know what to do. And I remember what that doctor told me. If you drink on this medicine, you've scratched everything we've done out. You've blown it, man. And I'm thinking about this stuff. I'm going, God, how can I be so stupid? Yeah. I didn't know what to do. Yeah. So I just fell on the floor and cried like a baby. I didn't know what to do. I just said, God, please help me. Please help me. And he did. I heard this voice say, if you live through it, we'll get you. And it gave me ease and comfort. It really did. I poured that whiskey out. I laid on the couch and I slept. The next morning I went to see this old guy that used to tell me that. He had 9 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. He had 5 years of Al-Anon. He was a very good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a loving member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he didn't beat me up with a big book. All he did was ask me, he said, if there's a solution, would you like to have it? I said, yes, indeed. I probably said, please, I don't know. All I know is I agreed to it. And he was scared to be around me. He hadn't seen me in quite some time. Last time he saw me, I was 185 pounds. Yeah. Now here I am about 110, because I put on about 10 pounds in a few months. I thought I was looking pretty good. And he's staying away from me. He said, I think you need to see a doctor. Yeah, I said, I got me a doctor. In fact, I got a whole bunch of them. And, bless his heart. Yeah, I put gray hairs in that man's head. But he told me, he said, I am responsible when anyone anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. I said, no, you're not. I still eaten up with false pride. I still couldn't say, can you help me? Yeah. And he knew that. But he slow walked me, and he said, look, I want you up here every day. You've lost your business. You've lost everything. Get what tools you have and move in my shop. My tools consisted of an old used shop towel with about four or five rusted, screwdrivers and assorted wrenches. That's all I had left out of 10 years accumulation of tools and equipment. I moved in that shop, and he told me, he said, this isn't about making money. This is about getting sober. Do you want sobriety? Yes, I do. Sobriety is the name of the game. And I didn't know what sobriety meant. The only thing I knew about sobriety is it made my life unbearable. When I was not drinking, my life got completely out of sorts. It got completely insane. And he put up with it. Yeah, hey, I'm not drinking. I'm going crazy. He's going, what are you doing? Yeah, are you doing drugs? I said, no, I'm not even doing the medicine my doctors told me to take. Well, by God, you got to do your medicine. I stuck around him for 3 months, and he's trying to give me a big book, and I'm sliding it back. He said, man, you've got to get into AA. You've got to make that long walk. If you want to be on this journey, you've got to, suit up and show up. Yeah. And I couldn't do it. I was scared to do it. I was scared of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was scared of not drinking, I believe. There again, my sobriety day is August. The first 4 months, my sobriety was kind of tough on me. And I'm not saying that for self-pity. I just want to let you know what you people helped me through. October is my belly button birthday, and my mom calls me up. She goes, I want you to come over here and celebrate your birthday with us. And I'm going to bake up a nice rum cake, and we're going to put some Bacardi 151 in it for you, and we're going to have a high-ho time. I said, Mom, I can't be, eating rum cake. You know, I'm trying to get sober. Oh, no, you come on over here and eat this rum cake. No, I can't eat that rum cake, Mom. Well, I think you're acting like a SOB, And that kind of hurt my feelings, and I kind of slammed up my phone. And Jim was listening to the conversation, my part of the conversation, and he told me, he said, man, you got some major problems here. Yeah, you need some recovery real bad. And I don't tell a lot of people, but he brought me his ODAT book the next day. He said, maybe you'll read this, since you won't read a big book, maybe you'll read this. And I did, and I got a lot out of it. I really did. A wonderful book. And that gave me the strength and the courage to do some more. Yeah. November, Thanksgiving, I'll show up to the family. Yeah, after I'm staying dry, because I haven't got in the fellowship yet. I'm just circling. I'm circling for a landing, but I hadn't landed yet. And people are coming up every day and sharing their experience, strength, and hope with me. And I mean, I'm around people in the fellowship, but I can't get into it. I'm scared of you people. Reality is, I don't like you people. Yeah. And Turkey Day, I get kind of kicked out. And I'm leaving thinking, well, I've been kicked out of better places. But it hurts. And then Christmas. And I walk in my mom and my aunt's house, and they basically throw me out. Go over to your daddy's house. He'll be glad to see you. You're acting just like your Uncle Robert. He was in Alcoholics Anonymous too. And that other uncle of yours out in California. I'm hearing this stuff, and it's making me angry. Hurting my feelings. And I've got these things going through my head going, oh, well, this is Christmas. This is a glorious day. Everybody should love each other. And so I sneak over to my dad's house. I walk in. They get up and walk right out. My dad gives me a fifth of imported Scotch whiskey for Christmas, knowing I've got about, 3 or 4 months of dry time. And that hurts. But that's reality. But let me tell you what it did for me. I got that fifth whiskey, and I went out to that beat-up pickup truck of mine. I threw that whiskey on the floor. I got in the driver's seat, and I thought, God, if you'll help me make it to attitude adjustment, I might make it throughout this day without taking a drink. And we got in that truck, and we're going to the little clubhouse, and every time I'd make a turn, that fifth would roll up and hit the side of that door and roll back. And this went all the way. And by the time I got to the attitude adjustment, I was almost in tears. My gut was raw. And I pulled up. I didn't want to go in, but I could see everybody in there, and they seemed like they were having a great time. And my life, my world was collapsing. It had collapsed. And I walked in that room, and I didn't have to say a word. You people came up to me and said, you don't have to drink today. It's going to be okay. We love you. If you only knew who I was, you wouldn't say that. I'm a loser. I've drank away family. I've treated a young child like hell, a wife like hell, parents like hell. I've treated everybody in my life like hell, and you're telling me you love me? Yeah, come on in. Have a cup of coffee. Let us get you a cup of coffee. Sit down. It's going to be okay. Good God. Can't take this stuff. And you people kept dishing it out. Didn't want to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started going to meetings. I'm going to more meetings. And I'm not hearing what I need to hear. Because I hadn't surrendered. So, one afternoon, somebody called and they were having a good meeting and they go, "Well, Philip, what do you think?" And I calmly stood up. I said, "Let me tell you people something right now. You're a bunch of losers. Yeah, you people are drinking and drugging, and I proceeded to take everybody's inventory, what I perceived what was going on. Yeah, and this committee up in my head was stomping and going absolutely insane, and I was jumping up and down, telling you I was going to shoot you and stab you. Yeah. I just finally collapsed in my seat, and some old gray-headed man across the room said, "Philip, you keep coming back, and we'll keep loving you until you learn how to love yourself." Whoa. I mean, he nailed me. He got me right between the eyes. He got me right in the heart, because I had an idea he wouldn't lie. And the next day, I walked in at the shop, and Jim had found out about it. And he had that look on his face. It's the same look that we all get when we know we've been caught. Yeah. He asked me, he said, "What the heck do you expect to get out of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous?" And I told him, "Happy, joyous, and free." That's not the correct answer. I'm here to tell you. He took my inventory. He took it harder than I took your inventory. And I'm glad he did. Because he told me the difference between being in the fellowship and being in the program. He told me the difference of what I could get in being in the program and being in the fellowship. Fellowship's a wonderful thing. Yeah. But I got to get sober. Yeah. I am looking to be happy, joyous, and free. He told me how I could get it. And he did it, I believe, in a loving way. It's kind of tough love. He got my attention. We went in that little office, and we started putting pen to paper. And he let me know some of the things I could expect to get. And he let me know the things I would have to do to get them. We started looking at our big book, and he told me, he said, "Right now, we're going to do just what this big book says. You're going to go home, you're going to read this big book. Yeah, you're going to read it. I don't care if you want to or not, but you'll read it, and you'll read it out loud." And I said, "Okay, I can do that." Yeah. And it took me a few days to read it. I'm not one of these fast readers. I didn't read it overnight. Yeah, but it took me a few days. And he said, "Okay, now this is what we're going to do." And he gave me some do's and don'ts and damn well betters. And we started doing a lot of work, and I started reading the big book every day. And he said, "No more than 2 pages, period. But we're going to read this big book every day." He said, "I want you to go home, and I want you to pack up all your hot rod magazines, put them up on a shelf. I want you to pack up all those Penthouse and Playboy magazines and put them in the dumpster." Yeah, because you'll not read anything that is not AA-approved literature for the next 12 months. I went, "What, are you out of your mind?" He said, "No, you're out of your mind." And he talked to me. He said, "Look, you've been drinking alcoholically for 24 years. Will you give 1/24 of your drinking career to get sober? Will you give 1/24 of your drinking career to get happy, joyous, and free? Yes, I will. I can do that. Yeah. One day at a time. Just one day at a time. He said, you'll get everything that big book tells you you can get. Every promise in that big book you can get. Now, do you want it? If you do, come and get it. Well, by God, I've been coming ever since. He made me a believer. Yeah, I started believing that. I'm just dumb enough to, I still believe it. He told me a whole bunch of stuff that I pass some of it on, some I don't. He told me, you cannot have a relationship for 12 months either. You gotta be kidding me. Look at me. I'm a handsome man. All 110 pounds, yeah. And he said, hey, you don't know how to have a relationship. You've never had one. You've had a relationship with a bottle of whiskey for 24 years. Yeah, you've heard everybody that's got close to you. How about learning to have a relationship with God and a relationship with yourself? Yeah, and then we'll take it from there. Sounds logical. Yeah, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I think he nailed me. So I agreed to that. I agreed to all kinds of stuff. He even told me he had my finances mapped out. Yeah. You'll not spend over $3 on a meal. Of course, just 15 years ago, you could actually get, you know, a meal for $3. And I did that. And parts of my life started coming together. And I'm going to these meetings, and my life is getting better. But I'm still a nervous wreck. I'm still crazy as a bed bug. I'm going to meetings. I can't stand still. I'm not doing my medicine, you know. I can't do that stuff. You know, this sobriety is going to work. It's going to work. Yeah. And some of the women in my home group would come up and pat my hand and go, Philip, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Yeah. And calm down. Yeah. It's rocked on and on and on. And very slowly, one day at a time, my life got better. And better and better. Anything would have been better. But I'm sleeping. I'm praying. That was one of his big deals. Prayer. Yeah. Better men than I pray every day on their knees. I had a lot of respect for this man, still do. And I thought, well, by God, if he knows better men than he does that pray, I'm going to be one of them. Yeah. And I'm not ashamed to pray. You know, I'll say a prayer in a heartbeat. And I know people have been praying for me this week because I felt it. And that's neat. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of things I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that isn't necessarily in this book. It's in this book. This book's full of love. Finally found what love is. Yeah. Excuse me, a little drink here. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to my meetings all the time, and I'm in an open meeting. I have 2.5 years sobriety. I'm doing everything I'm asked to do. I'm sponsoring people. I'm on committees. I'm emptying ashtrays still. I'm cleaning, you know, the sink. I'm doing all the grub work still and loving every second of it. This little old woman came walking in this my home group, and I beat her to the coffee pot and said, baby, good looking. I'll pour you a cup of coffee. I don't know what I said. I'll be honest with you. All I know is something in my heart, you know, just kind of went, there she is. Yeah. And I poured her a cup of coffee and we chit-chatted. And it was real nice. Had a real nice talk. Yeah. By this time, I knew how to talk to ladies. By this time, I knew what a lady was. Yeah. Come in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. You get in this fellowship, you're a lady in my book. I mean, this place is full of ladies. Yeah. And I was taught to respect them, each and every one of them. Yeah. And by this time, I learned how to love without lusting. But this one was kind of unique. And I started following her around like a little puppy, I suppose. And make another long story short, we got married in an AA meeting. Yeah. We dated 1 year. And we were inseparable for a year almost. And we got married in a group called High Anxiety. And we got married by an AA judge in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to get drunk with this judge. Yeah. And he sobered up before I did. But we went to Bob's meeting. We had our license and rings. And it was really neat. They ran out of time, had a little time left, I mean. A lady said, does anybody have a burning desire? And this one woman jumped up and said, yeah, I want to know what they're doing here. And Teresa said, oh, we'd like to get married. And the judge said, you got license? And of course, Teresa goes, well, certainly we have license. And he said, do the chips, I'll be right back. So Bob went out to his car and got his little book, came in, and we did the chips, did the Lord's Prayer, and Teresa and I got married. This is my wife, Teresa. Stand up, baby. Come in February, we will have been married 12 years, which I think is wonderful. And we're still inseparable. And she's a black belt Al-Anon. She jumps around. This is some of the wonderful things you people have given me. Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous has completely changed my life. It's completely changed my perspective. It's completely changed everything about me. I didn't know what gratitude was, you know, 15 years ago. And like last night, to sit me down, I can talk about what I'm grateful for hours. But I can tell you one thing I'm grateful for, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous. You people love me back to health. Yeah. You taught me everything I need to know about life, about love, yeah, about helping my fellow man. And I'm so blessed I don't know what to do some days. And not only do I still do what I did when I first came in 15 years ago, I still make the coffee, I still do basically anything I'm asked to do. You know, I'm still on committees, still sponsor people. Today I have a home church, which 15 years ago, I would have lost a bet. I had no idea I'd go back to church to expand my spiritual life. Yeah. I've been behind the podium of a church. I can't believe it. I've become a Sunday school teacher of all things. Yeah. And I've added to my church, like I've tried to add Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. And it's all one day at a time. And it's just giving back what's so freely been given to me. I mean, what a wonderful life. What an absolute wonderful life. I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.